All right, ladies and gentlemen, welcome back. Thank you for joining us. Henrik here with Red Eyes TV, redeyesmembers.com. It's great to have you back with us again today. We have another great show for you lined up. We're going to talk with a political activist in Sweden who's had a bit of an interesting journey herself. She's been kind of somewhat in the limelight recently. She had a big Twitter account that was shut down because of, I think it was due to age, but obviously she was getting kind of popular, getting out there a little bit, helping to spread the message about what's happening in Sweden, because as I'm sure no one is not familiar with, we're in a very bad situation right now. So with us we have Isabella Jarvani Nilsson. She's half Persian, half Swedish, but she's one of these ladies that have kind of, she hasn't turned into an anti-Swedish activist. She's a pro-Swedish nationalist activist. So thank you for coming on, Isabella. It's great to have you here, first of all.
Yeah, thank you too for having me on the show.
You bet. So why don't you tell us your story a little bit in terms of what you've kind of been through. You're a young lady. You've just kind of woken up to a lot of these topics. You've done some events that you've organized in Sweden. You're based around in the Gothenburg area. I, of course, was grown up in Kungälv, which is not too far from there, about 20 kilometers from there. I know the situation very well of how bad things are in Gothenburg, but tell us kind of your journey, how you got to this point.
Yes, so do you want to know how I got to the point, you know, with my views or with my activism?
Well, let's do both. Whatever you feel is the appropriate way to start. How was the situation for you when you were growing up and going to school in your area?
Yeah, yes, so I actually live in a suburb in the edge of the city, but I went to school in town because my parents didn't want me to go here among the suburb children, because there's always been a lot of talk about how disorganized it is there. And I actually had uncles who grew up and went to those schools, so we kind of knew how bad the case was in the suburbs. And you know, I feel like it's gone quite fast now in Gothenburg, at least. I feel like the crimes really has skyrocketed, and you can now see it much more clearly when you're walking on the streets and everything. So when I was little, it wasn't as bad, actually, in the main parts of the town. But we always had problems with integration and everything in the suburbs. So when I grew up, I kind of saw this, you know, I could just go out, you know, in the stairs outside the apartment and see that the integration had failed. So I never really feel like I have, you know, had to wake up and suddenly see that things are much different from how the media and the establishment portrays it. Feel like I have always, you know, I have grown up with the knowledge that sometimes it's not always what it seems.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, how was it in school for you? Was there any situation where you were, was it minority Swedish, or was it 50-50? What was the situation there like for you?
So I actually went to a different school when I was when I started. I went to a school where there were, you know, quite a good balance from grade 0 to 7, and then in 8th grade I actually switched school because there was a lot of problems with you know, authorities and stuff, you know, around it, and they did a lot of things that weren't okay, you know, with But I always had friends, and it was quite a good mix. The immigrants there were quite integrated and everything. But then at my other school, there was a much different situation where it was quite, you know, it was kind of 50-50. I mean, if you looked at it, but at the same time, I feel like the multiculturalism still took over.
What would you say to people who don't know about the situation too much, that they're like, most people know these days, but there's still so much people that are denying what's happening. They don't want to recognize it. It's not polite to talk about the situation in Sweden and stuff like that. Yeah. Just explain that situation a little bit to those people, if we have some of those watching and listening and stuff like that, like things have transformed so radically in Sweden and so fast that it's kind of, I think it's caught most Swedes off guard. They still think they are able to do things like normally and stuff like that. But the reality is that criminality, gang warfare in certain areas of Sweden now is just like totally out of control. I read one story just the other day was a guy who had stopped his car because some youths, we say politely, all right, had thrown eggs at his car. And he stopped the car. He got out of it and just said, like, hey, what are you doing? He's like surprised by this, I assume. And they accosted him. They broke his jaw. They broke his ribs, I think, and stuff like that. And I just feel that, like, there's still Swedes that operate on that level. They still think it's the same old kind of high trust society with just a little bit of additions to it. But it's like it's radically transformed. What would you say about the situation?
Yeah, I think that, I mean, I too, I haven't been raped or anything. I haven't been robbed or anything yet. I can go out to the store and not be attacked. But, you know, just look at the crime rates. They are skyrocketing. When my mother was younger, they barely had any rapes or murders or anything. If something happened, even in the bigger cities, it was such a big news. And they wrote about murders and everything for weeks. But now, you know, we had a 13-year-old being shot. And we've heard nothing about it, you know, after, you know, just these simple headlines that were the same nights. And, you know, I read about new crimes every single day. I feel like I hear about people being murdered every other day. I hear about people.
It's crazy.
You know, it's not just how people in society treats each other, but it's also with the authorities not having enough resources and people dying within the healthcare, not getting any help and being completely abused, you know, by the system. And then when someone tries to take help from the police or whatever, they don't get any help. And I feel like, you know, as I said before, I can go to the store and not be raped. I can go out and not be attacked. But for example,
good.
Last year,
right, that's like,
had,
oh, that's a good thing now. Like, well, everything is fine then.
Yes, but 20 people, for example, last year reported to have been raped every single day, and 10 of these cases were actually said to be about children. For example, when my mother was younger, we didn't have anything near that number. I mean, can't you see? And it's the same thing with robberies, with murders, with shootings, with explosions. We've had a huge amount of explosions, and they are just increasing, 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 increasing. And when we look at who tends to commit crimes, especially sexual crimes, it's usually people from rape cultures and from other countries. And those people didn't live here before, so obviously it is a new problem.
Yeah, absolutely. I'm showing that BBC article here. It's just from, what is it, a couple of days ago? 2 days ago. Sweden's 100
yes.
explosions this year. What's going on? Well, we know what's going on, but the BBC won't address these issues.
No.
So I just feel, before you continue on this, and it's very good, we need to kind of expose this and really talk about this so people understand. And Gothenburg, as you say, has been very... for a while, Gothenburg was the biggest recruitment capital for ISIS outside of, like, Arabic states, I think it was, or something bizarre like that. A lot of people from Gothenburg went there because there is radicalization, there is an issue with integration. So yes, there's a propensity for some of these newcomers that comes in, these new Swedes, as they call them, to of course end up outside of society. For one, they're attracted to things like, you know, their own culture. If they grow up in Sweden and do feel deracinated, meaning they don't have any roots or association to the country, it's very easy for them to actually pull back and draw to the most cultural kind of extremes that they can, which would be something like ISIS. Like, oh, that makes me feel rooted. That's like all, you know, very, very extreme in that sense. So there's a reason to the madness of why that happens. But anyway, Isabella, before we continue on that, just briefly, because I thought we skipped it over a little bit, tell us what... So you said there wasn't anything specific that kind of made you wake up. It's always kind of been around you. It's just gradually gotten worse and worse. What made you go into activism? And I think you organized, you can tell us about that. You organized one specific event. I think it was in Gothenburg. A lot of people attended that and stuff like that. How did you get to that point, deciding you have to do something?
Yes. So, I mean, as I said, this has been, you know, a part of my reality for all my life, you know, itching and hurting, you know, to see my own country fall into pieces. And so I think it was during November or something a year ago now that I started to learn about Global Compact for Migration. And I feel like I came to a point where I was so angry and I didn't know what to do. I felt like now I have to do something, or at least my parents has to do something. And I was very disappointed with the adults I had around me. I had family members who didn't even vote before until the election last year and who didn't even do it then. And I was so disappointed, and I felt like people and adults didn't take the responsibilities as, you know, a part of this country and descendants to our ancestors, the people who built this country up. And so I actually had quite a fight with my mom, and I told her that, you know, this isn't okay. I mean, what are you prioritizing because I wasn't, I hadn't come out with my views yet, but I did still write on the internet, not using my real name and everything. And I knew how much people hated people with my opinions. And I knew I got into debates and stuff that got really heated, and people got so mad at me in school and everything for my opinions. And so I felt like I wanted the people around me to stand up for their country and stand up for each other when we are, you know, harassed in school and everything for our opinions. Because there is a lot of propaganda against a lot of globalist propaganda in school and everything. So after having that fight with my mom, she helped me organize a demonstration here in Gothenburg. In the middle of the city, and we had quite a good amount of people coming there. But then when we kept going, it was, you know, less and less people. I think it wasn't as fresh anymore, and you know how Swedes are. As long as people are too comfortable, they won't care to do anything in real life.
So you're saying the first one was a lot of attention on it, a lot of people came, and you kept doing those, and then there was like not as many people that showed up anymore.
Yeah, and it was the same thing in Stockholm and in Helsingborg as well. So, right. I wasn't the only one, you know, who took the initiative. They had things in Stockholm and other towns as well, and they wanted to keep going. I think they had some demonstration not that long ago, but they didn't really post that much about it, and there's not many people coming anymore. So that's really sad.
So what we can talk later about kind of what your plans are and moving forward and stuff like that, but let's keep talking about that a little bit. I wanted to ask you, you know, I know that your mother is supportive now, although, as you're kind of alluding to, she wasn't always supportive. Was there other people around you? Like, how were the treatment by other people in school that found out that you were doing this kind of stuff?
Yeah, I mean, my mom, it's not that she didn't support me before. It's just that she didn't really know anything about politics. She wanted to, you know, kind of shield herself from the very, you know, the reality that is hurtful to read about, you know, people being murdered and everything. But, well, the reactions from people in school, I remember in my first interview, I just said that, no, there haven't been any problems and everything, because there really wasn't in the beginning. But then, there were some conflicts between me and my closest friends. I lost a lot of friends, and I actually did lose quite some friends before I got politically active as well, because I think I said sometime when I was younger in that I like the Sweden Democrats or something, which I don't support them anymore. I think my views are a bit stricter than their politics, but yes. So I lost quite some friends, but that's it. I didn't get attacked or anything, so that's good.
Yeah, I get a big plus. I think it's, I mean, we talked earlier about like rape rates and stuff, and obviously it's not a laughing matter. I think it's like, what is the reality of for young women now in Sweden? One in four or one in five, I think it is, something like that. I mean, that's, the fact is it's out of control, and it's been out of control for years. And the response by the authorities, police, the politically correct establishment, media, all these, frankly, disgusting people that are trying to cover this up and put the lid on and say that this is just, well, it's because of men only or something like that, that don't recognize that you can't just bring people from other parts of the world, from different cultures, from different ethnic backgrounds, and just mash them together and think nothing will come of this, or no consequences will come of this. One in four, one in five, that's out of control. And the fact is that the state have rescinded, what's the right term, on their responsibility to ensure that the citizens are kept safe, essentially. And Sweden is slowly turning into kind of I mean, civil war is a little bit extreme, although it might go in that direction, but it's like just it's constant criminality and conflict on the streets for a lot of people out there. And that's kind of the situation that a lot of people deal with now. And these, you know, many of these people in the media elite and, you know, share your opinion on that too, but most of them live in these very, very Swedish neighborhoods and areas. They don't really get to experience this themselves. So as usual, it's, you know, maybe like lower class or a little bit more poor people that can't afford to move to an all Swedish area somewhere. That's they're taking the brunt end of this, right?
Yes, but I also think that a lot of these politicians knows exactly what they're doing. They just don't care because they have their money that they earn and everything. I mean, they are top politicians. They are quite experienced now. And, you know, the statistics are there. They know about them for sure. I don't think they could have missed that. I just think that they don't care. They don't, you know, I think you even here on Red Eyes made some video about, you know, leaders not having any children or something.
Yeah.
And I think that's the case. They don't care about the future. They just care about their own money. Definitely not the country's economy or anything.
No.
Yeah.
No, they've given up completely. They've sold out. There's a lot of international organizations that have pushed our politicians. I mean, I remember back in the day, I mean, ironically, you'd think like the Conservative Party and stuff like that, they would be the kind of the resistance forces to opening the borders and mass migration. But in Sweden, as I think in the UK, too, I think the Tories have been also responsible for bringing in a lot of migrants. But the moderate party, which is supposedly the Conservative Party under Fredrik Reinfeldt, they're really the ones that massively just like blew open the borders to Sweden, and you have people inside of the moderate party like Carl Bildt, for example. He's a Bilderberger. He has close relationship with people in NATO and you know other you know the EU, other globalist organizations. So these guys have gotten the instruction, like this is what's happening now, this is what we're doing. That's what I think anyway.
Yes, and I mean even the I mean, of course, there may be some people that are brainwashed, that are, you know, that have grown up in and, you know, just read the opposite of the things that I have read and lived in the opposite of the areas that I have grown up in and gone to school in. So, of course, there might be some people who simply are brainwashed and simply believe in the things they talk about. But, you know, I can't for my life buy that these top politicians and the ones that have experience now, like Annie Lööf, for example, she's probably one of the worst ones of the leaders in the government. And no, I just don't think that they don't have a clue about what they are doing.
No, exactly. They're traitors, frankly, whatever their motivation is. I think it's the destruction of Sweden. That's the agenda. That's what they want to do. And I think it's just a matter of time before Swedes generally start waking up to this. It's happening already. I do believe, you know, unfortunately, we've talked about this now a couple of election cycles here. Sweden Democrats are going to be the biggest party, blah, blah, blah. But I actually think we are there now because it's been so bad the last just a couple of years even. But regardless, I think they're probably just seeking to inflict as much chaos and damage as possible. I don't know what other position to take, frankly. It just seems that like they just want to make it as bad as fast as possible as they can to inflict as much damage before Swedes finally just wake up and say we've had enough and take care of the situation by, of course, voting out these people out of power.
Yes, I mean, that is what they are doing, and they for sure know that it is what they are doing. So, of course, that must be the agenda.
So let's talk a bit about the situation with, you know, you've done some interviews. What was the issue with the Twitter shutdown, and why do you think that happened?
Yes. So, I mean, Twitter has some rules about who can have it and who can't, who are too young and who isn't. So if you are under the age of 16, which I am turning 16 in a couple of days now, you're not by their policy allowed to have Twitter. However, you don't have to fill in your information and your age or when you are born. And so a lot of people say that if you create your account when you are under the age of 13, you won't get it back if you then type your age in, and they can see, even if you have turned 16 or 17 or even older, you will still lose your account because you were underage for having Twitter when you created the account. However, I was 15 when I created my account in December last year. And so, but I understand that they asked me for my information when I filled my age in. However, when we sent in a birth certificate in Swedish, in English, a picture of my ID, my mom's ID, we sent in all the information and more that they wanted, but they wouldn't give me my account back. And that is not how it's supposed to work. So personally, I think with all of the shutdowns that has been lately, that they just took their chance, took this really good chance not to give my account back and, you know, shutting me down without saying, okay, this is because of your opinions. Because then, as we all, or as you and I understand, that would be against free speech, because I haven't, you know, broken their rules of hate speech or anything.
Yeah, that's right. Of course, then we have girls like this who still has her account, and that seems just fine. Not a problem at all. Greta Thunberg, what is she? Is she 16? I forget her age now.
Yes, we are born the same year, but she turned 16 in a bit before me. So she turned 16 in the beginning of this year, but I think she made her account way before that.
Yeah, no, she did. Absolutely, she had it. I think it says on there, doesn't it? They redesigned Twitter and it just looks horrible now. But it used to say... Oh, we joined. There we go. June 2018. Is that true?
Yeah, she was about the same age as I was when I made my account, so...
Okay, all right. Regardless, she gets a check mark because she spouts the establishment's point of view. That's the big difference here.
I don't think her parents had to send in her birth certificate.
Probably
her,
not.
Her mother's ID and everything,
no,
so yes.
No. So they deny that. Is there a Swedish Twitter HQ that you could send this to, or did you have to do the international address?
No, I had to send it to the international address.
Okay.
And and I actually, you know, this happened on a Saturday, and the authorities didn't open until Monday, and I had to go there and I had to order the papers, and I ordered them in both English and Swedish, and I sent them both versions and everything. So I did everything I could. I did everything they asked me to do and even more, because we kept sending in papers and everything, but they just, no, it was just case closed all the time.
Yeah, absolutely crazy. Let's talk about a couple of things here. I think this is from Gothenburg. Yeah, this is Gothenburg. 10 people was robbing in a single, I guess, or an 18-year-old that was alone.
Yeah.
These kinds of things are obviously commonplace. I mean, this happens every day. I mean, I remember growing up, I never read about murders, like never. Like that was a very rare. Sure, there could be some level of criminality, maybe some robberies or something, but there was minor things, right? And then all of a sudden, there was just this escalation, and I don't know when it really picked off, took off. 90s, it started getting bad, and obviously into the noughts, I think they say in English, right? The 2000, going into 2010, it was gradually getting worse. But then after like 20... I guess after the migrant crisis, 2015, 2016, that's really when it just like it's just gotten out of control. We're talking murders every other day, hand grenades going off, explosions, bombs, robberies, stabbings. Did I say rapes? Yeah.
Yes, because it isn't within our culture. It's as simple as that. You go in groups and torture people, basically.
We've seen these cases where there's a humiliation tactics. It's happened in Sweden. It's happened in the Netherlands recently. I think it was a gang of immigrant youths that created a fake dating profile on the Tinder or something like that. And they lured him into a situation where they humiliated him, got it on tape and stuff like that. I think they had a knife or hand weapons of some kind. Threatening him and putting up, and they're laughing. They think that this is funny. There's like this humiliation kind of process. I remember one case too. I forget which town it was, but it happened in Sweden as well. Those kinds of things are getting pretty common as well now.
Yes, this even happened on my school actually when I went into what we call high school in Sweden, which isn't really the same thing as what you call high school in the US and everything. But this happened on my school. This happened on my friend's schools. This happened outside school. This happened, you know, that they filmed things. And this wasn't just, you know, boys doing it to other boys, but girls doing it to other girls. And even the police now in Gothenburg actually have understood that it has a lot to do with humiliation. And when it comes to robberies, not that much to do about money, because often they go into, you know, teenagers and everything who usually don't have that much, you know, to take. And sometimes when they rob people, when they have robbed those who may have had money, they didn't even, you know, take everything. They just tortured them. And so the police has also gone out, you know, that is a quite, you know, an accepted thing to recognize that it is about humiliation. What they don't mention, though, is that it's usually immigrant men who do this. They just leave it at men.
Right.
And then, yeah.
So let me show you this article here, too. So this is kind of a Google Translate, so it's a little bit funky. Keep that in mind, guys. But it was a recent Facebook post by, I forget who the source was, Erik van der Hegg. Published a Facebook post where he did a search, I guess, in the crime registry or whatever the exact translation of that is, that we do have in Sweden. And he typed in I guess he was looking for someone or names or something. Every fourth, I think, that changed. Originally, the guy on Facebook wrote every third with the name Ali had been found in the criminal database in Sweden or something like that, which is kind of crazy. And I was reading some other statistics, too, and in America, some people know 13 doing 50, which is kind of a joke, kind of a meme, right? But in Sweden now, we have 20 doing 70. As a 20% of the population is doing 70% of the crimes. That is a vastly overrepresentation in terms of statistics. What do you make of this, and the fact that, like, you're not allowed to kind of talk about this, or they cover this up, but then, you know, why this comes out is because we don't anymore register per ethnicity in Sweden, right? They made it illegal in 2014 or something? I forget what year. They made it, they scrapped race and ethnicity from the statistics, essentially, the census. But so you can find it on other things, like looking at names, for example. So they typed in Ahmed, I think, and Ali, and they got out like a lot of kind of interesting statistics from that. What's your take on this? Because that shows us a picture which we otherwise cannot kind of demonstrate anymore because they took away ethnicity from the census.
Yes, I mean, a lot of people claim that, oh, but it isn't important and everything, but I think it is very important because it goes to show that sending at least criminals back will make a huge difference. It is a very, you know, important a very important thing to mention when discussing, you know, how tolerant we should be towards immigrants and people from other cultures that live here. And it goes, so, you know, it's differences between the Western world and the rest of the world, and how they treat each other there and how they treat other people there. How we speak a lot about in Sweden about how minorities are treated, because it's usually immigrants doing this, of course, and a lot of the times the victims are Swedish people. We speak a lot of about how minorities are treated, but we don't speak as much about how Swedish people are treated or how Swedish people will be treated when we become a minority, because if this continues, then we will become a minority. And it's already this bad. I mean, where will we end up?
Yeah, I mean, I think it will be worse than South Africa probably at this rate, because there's just such... It's kind of ingrained into the system, as you say, with like humiliation tactics and robberies. And of course, rape is kind of another level of I guess it's a sign of conquest or something. It's really kind of hard to figure out. I would think and I would assume that if a country would have let, if there was war in let's say Scandinavia or something like that, and there was other countries opening the doors, I would assume I would be very thankful for the country that let me in, right? And got to let me stay, and they took care of me and stuff. But it's this weird thing, which I understand it. I'm not trying to pretend that I'm like acting dumb here or anything. I know what's going on, but I'm just like, for newbies out there, like, what is the deal with this just over the, and it's not everyone. Yes, I get that. Sure. There's some that behave or whatever, but statistically, it's just so out of control that something has to be done about this. And you'd think, Isabella, that at the very base minimum, you would get deportations for like, you know, like severe criminals, people that have gone on to join ISIS and stuff like that. But there's been like serious discussions in the Swedish media where like, no, we need to take care of these people. You know, these deluded feminists that think like, well, we should just, if we give them a job and give them a nice apartment, these returning ISIS fighters, they'll fit right in and they'll be great. Like, no, they don't want this. They hate being in the situation they are in. That's why they went to join ISIS to begin with. What do you make of that?
A lot of these people don't flee from war either. They're not here because they're, you know, and that's the thing. It's mostly young men coming here. The people who probably, you know, would have had it the best during a time of war, the people who are the strongest and, you know, the healthiest. It's not, you know, elderly or women or, you know, even actual children. A lot of people pretend to be children as well. That's a problem we've noticed. And when it comes to, you know, ISIS fighters and everything, it's just crazy because we also have these schools, you know, these Islamic schools that are, because I have family members who actually work, you know, with building things and with the ventilation and those kinds of stuff. I think it's called, you know, with air and stuff in walls. And so, I know that there's several of these schools in Gothenburg. And I actually thought of, you know, contacting media about this as well, me and my family members who work within that industry, because there are several of these schools that aren't even allowed to be open because they have safety problems. They don't have, you know, elevators for handicapped children and stuff. So a lot of these schools are not even allowed to be open, but the politicians let them have them anyway.
Yeah, it's nuts. I'm showing the article here, too, about kind of the proof for that earlier point that you made, that most of the children that comes in are not children. We had a famous case a couple of years ago. Swedish dentist Bent Herlitz revealed to authorities that after checking the molar teeth of hundreds of migrant children, 80% of the so-called children were actually adults. And, of course, this has been so obvious. Some of them have, like, beards. They have, like, wrinkles and stuff. And I don't know. What do you think drives that? I mean, it's so... Again, it's not just naivety on the part of the people that are allowing this. It's almost like they want just to drive in as many people as they possibly can. What do you think?
I think it's crazy. I don't understand how people, you know, can't see this. But I guess they just live in their bubbles. I actually called them the bubble colony once in when I... Because they've just moved into bubbles. They believe, they think that journalists actually aspire to tell the truth and politicians know what they're doing and that these people are, you know, experts on what they are talking about. And yes, they are experts on the things they are talking about. They know very well what they are doing. And I don't know how you can't see that. I just don't understand it, how you can have, you know, such a lack of intuition that you can see things happen before your eyes and still not understand that things are wrong.
No, it's a case where, you know, they're trying to convince us that the sky is pink, right? And we're like,
yes.
No, it's blue. It's pink. And that's really the war now. And the war is... Again, it's not between, like, migrants and Swedes. It's internally within the Swedish society that this is happening. And I want people to understand as well that look at how many people that are losing family members and friends and relationships and things. Like, they always say, well, don't try to divide us and nonsense like this over, like, if you bring up that you don't want open borders, you think immigration, like, on this level is totally out of control. It's obviously bad. Look at everything that's happening. Our kids, our elderly are suffering. Everyone's suffering, essentially. But... No, their point is let's take as many people in as possible. And if you bring up this idea that it's not good, they say, well, you're dividing us. I think immigration overall has probably been the biggest one single topic that has divided various European nations internally like nothing else. You know, because, I mean, again, you're lucky if your family on your side. Many people don't have that luxury or whatever you want to call that. They're not so fortunate. People lose family members. People they have known for their all of their lives or 10, 15 years, they just turn their back on them because they say, like, this is insanity. This has to stop. So that's what I feel. It's like it's a huge wedge issue, immigration. And the elite, the establishment has managed to divide our countries down the middle, essentially.
Yes, and that's something that I very much pointed out with especially one of my speeches here in Gothenburg at the Gustav Adolf Square. And... yeah, I don't understand how you can become, you know, I think there's something special with us humans and when someone criticizes our way of thinking or our way of living or something that, you know, our reality, we don't really you know, want to wake up and realize that we have been wrong, and because we are so scared that our, you know, and our entire way of thinking, our entire, you know, plan for how we will survive, or we don't want that, you know, taken away from us. We don't want that challenged even, because we are so scared of the thought of being wrong, or in some way, you know, looking stupid, or losing the little power that we have, you know, maybe within a group of friends, or it could be anything really.
Yeah, there's just so many of these cases, too, Isabella, where you have blatant criminality, or where children are abused, or there's rapes involved and stuff, but the system looks the other way, right? And they're so lenient to the point where they let go. I've heard arguments where some say, well, it's worse if Swedish men rape, because they kind of know that it's wrong. But so the argument is, well, we haven't taught these other people that are coming in yet that it's wrong. So therefore, kind of, it's okay. Like, that there's no inherent morality in the fact that, like, well, this is obviously the wrong behavior, right? So they're so lenient that they let them go. But if you look at people, Swedish people that make just comments on Facebook, they might get the cops knocking on their doors and charging them for hate crimes and fining them and stuff like this. It's so out of control. It's, you know, back to the point, I'm sure if you heard the term anarcho-tyranny, that it's like, it's anarchy for Swedes, but it's it is anarchy for us, but there's no law in place when it comes to certain set of criminals. But for us, as soon as we even try to put up resistance or speak up against it or say that this is wrong, then the wrath of the law is there to like put a boot on our faces, right?
Yes, of course. And that's the thing, you know, the person pointing out the problem is the one being punished instead of the criminal, because that is dangerous to the state, of course.
Yeah, it's dangerous to the system because it exposes them for what it is. I'm sure
it's not that hard to expose them either.
No, it's the most obvious thing ever, and I think that's why they're resorting to deleting us and censoring us and shadow banning us. The algorithms are you know, tweaked to make sure that our stuff doesn't spread as much, right? Because our arguments are, it's so simplistic to expose what's happening. So the system, the only recourse they have is to silence the people that talk about stuff they don't like, right?
Yes, I know. I mean, I myself am shadow banned like crazy on Instagram, on Twitter, everywhere. When my Twitter account was deleted, they kept, you know, small pieces of it. And I don't know if they still do. I think they do still. On Google, so if you search my name, you would see my old pieces of my torn apart, my poor old Twitter account showing up instead of my new one, because, you know, I wrote kind of, you know, quite many tweets and I've done quite many stuff now that those things should have turned up instead.
Yeah, no, they block it. I saw a search engine just the other day, a search for our name, Red Ice TV, and it was a new search engine out of Switzerland. I think it was called, was it Swiss Cows? It's kind of a funny name, but they actually seem pretty good. Their privacy, and they actually have a little bit better search algorithm as opposed to DuckDuckGo. Has kind of, there's some issues with that. Start page is not that great. Google is generally a good search engine, but they've started to tweak and change so much now because they're more politically biased. Because that's the primary agenda to them, that if you search for Red Eyes, it's all the negativity, all the smear jobs, all the lies about us that comes up first. This other search engine, it spat out all the, like, you know, the correct stuff that people go and click in on if they search for our names. And it, you know, we got to do something on that once. But so, you know, people, they got to get off of Google, they got to get off of YouTube, they got, you know, Twitter. It's great to be on these platforms and try to spread the word, obviously. But at the same time, as you say, Isabella, I mean, it's so frustrating if you're on there, you try to spread the word and stuff, and you know that the whole algorithm is just like working against you and shadow banning you and saying, if you say the wrong things, we'll make sure it doesn't spread to even the followers that you do have, right?
Yes, and I had, I think, 5 of my friends or something complaining about my stuff, the stuff that I write, not popping up in their feeds when they are new and when they refresh it and everything. They have to go to my profile to see it a lot of the times. And, you know, it's just so obvious, you know, and it's the same thing when your channel was removed at first, when I was searching for Red Ice Media, then on YouTube, I had to write the entire name for anything to show up. I wrote Red Ice. Barely anything popped up. I had to write the exact sentence, Red Eyes Media.
Yep. And that's gone now too, of course.
Yeah, of course.
Now we want to plug, we're going to take a little break here. I have a lot more questions I want to ask you about, like, obviously where this is going, what's going to happen, what's the solution, what's our way out of the situation, what do you think about repatriation? I want to ask you what you think about both Sweden Democrats, but also the AFS, Alternative for Sweden. If you've ever had any issues, we'll save this for the second part, but if you've ever had any issues with a nationalist, or let's take the talking point from our detractors and our enemies. I'm going to call it, let's say, a white supremacist, whatever that actually means, right? But if you've actually ever had any issues for any one of those because of the fact that you're mixed, we'll save that question for part two. But plug your Twitter account and tell us a little bit about what your plans are. Do you have any upcoming events you'd like to alert people to? What do you have got going on right now?
So right now I don't have any special events or anything. I actually want to start up my own YouTube channel. I have created a channel and I have quite many subscribers for, I think I have one video where we sang the national anthem at a demonstration or something. So that's my main goal now. I haven't been doing that much during the summer. I wanted to kind of take a break from politics. I did attend other people's events and I did stay updated and post on social media, but not any physical events or anything like that. So my next step, you know, with my activism is probably starting a YouTube channel. And then it's probably just, you know, taking the opportunities that pops up.
Yeah, be careful. Don't invest too much time on YouTube. You might get this. No, it's all worth it. Obviously, yeah. I think we should ride the broken cart, whatever, until the wheels fall off. I do agree on that.
Yes, I thought that maybe I should start, you know, a bitch shoot or something, or bitch shoot maybe is the name, and you know, upload the same video there as well, so that if my YouTube gets deleted, then I still have them uploaded, and I'll
backups.
Have a couple of views there.
Yeah, link them. There's a way. I don't think you have to have X amount of subs or anything like that on YouTube, but you can link them. So BitChute originally got started as kind of a syncing backup thing, right? So that you have your YouTube channel, then you auto kind of sync all those videos to BitChute. So you don't even have to as long as you have your YouTube channel, you don't have to re-upload them to BitChute. It just auto syncs over on the other platform, which is kind of nifty and nice, actually. I was looking at something yesterday called Library. Again, a lot of these are so new, right? They're so young or whatever you want to call it that they haven't like kicked off just yet. I can just briefly show that right here at the end. If it will load, yeah, Library, your favorite content, you can download it's built on, I think, the BitTorrent protocol, and it's built with on the blockchain in terms of the metadata for the videos and stuff that you upload. So it seems pretty interesting. Any one of these could take off. I think BitTube or OpenTube, there's like so many of them now, right? But we need something solid, which we know is going to be able to go into live streaming and actually be there and have an interest in upholding free speech and stuff like that. I know the Library does. I heard an interview with the creator, the CEO of the company yesterday, and he sounds totally on board in the sense that he knows what's happening on YouTube. He set it up because he knows that content is being deleted and stuff like that. So, and again, I just checked this out yesterday, so I don't know how good it is or anything like that. But yeah. Library is one. We just have to spread out, I guess, as many tentacles as we can, and then we'll see whatever takes off, I guess, right?
Yes, I think that the obstacle with these, you know, alternative websites is that a lot of people tend to go on YouTube not to watch alternative content, but to watch mainstream content, to watch, you know, mainstream, these influencers we have and everything. And so that is probably the obstacle there, that there is not such, I don't think so, at least, that there is as big of a variation there with content. I think that we need more different types of creators there, maybe.
Yeah, exactly. And I think as soon as, you know, they begin to when they begin to mass censor YouTube, and we'll see what happens. If they have an update coming December 10th, big one, they were talking about if monetization is not possible or if it's not commercially viable, they might just scrap your channel and stuff. So I don't think there will be one date there will be mass bannings, but I just think they'll just go for more and more and more, and all of a sudden it will be like no interesting content left on YouTube, essentially. So that's where I think we'll end up.
Yes, however, they have, you know, shut down a couple of people at the same time, you know, things
Yeah, no, they
happening
have.
the same night. So I think that they take a couple of people, you know,
Yeah, what's
here
your
and there.
absolutely. What's your do you have a URL for the YouTube, or can people just search your name on YouTube? How do they find you there?
No, I just have my name, Isabella Nilsson Jarvandi.
Okay. All right. We'll add a link to that, guys, and then of course you're showing the Twitter here too. Do make sure you follow her over there. She lost a lot of followers on Twitter, so this one is new. This is October 2019, so yeah, not too long ago. We have 2,000 over there. Follow her, Isabella Nilsson. No, not an N at the end. It's a 1 at the end instead, right?
Yes,
The username.
Isabella Nilsson1.
Nilsson1, that's right. All right, cool. All right, guys, we'll take a short break here. Stay with us, guys. We'll take a short break, and then we'll continue in part 2 with Isabella Nilsson. We'll be right back.
Yes.
Watch the full show at redicemembers.com. Sign up now.
On October 17th, YouTube deleted our channel Red Ice TV, and a week later, Red Ice Media, our backup. We had no strikes at the time on either. YouTube never sent us an email, they did not get back to us regarding our appeal, and despite thousands of people writing Team YouTube, there has been zero communication from them after we were thrown off the video publisher's website. Luckily, nothing has been lost. Everything is still available on redice.tv and redicemembers.com, together with all our members' exclusive content. Make sure you get a subscription and support us. A lot of our recent videos and shows were automatically backed up on our BitChute channel. Subscribe to us there, bitchute.com/redicetv. More recent shows are embedded via BitChute on redice.tv, and we have always hosted our own MP3s on the website, the podcast version of the show. We have RSS feeds both for the radio show, the interviews, and a separate RSS feed for the videos posted on our website. Subscribe to both of these feeds to get the latest content, and this is a great way of getting a notification as well as soon as new shows and videos are available. We are in the process of uploading older shows to our BitChute channel now. We will go back and update shows on redice.tv that previously was linked back to our now censored YouTube channel. Subscribe to our BitChute channel, bitchute.com/redicetv. We are rebuilding our subscriber base with an already large audience over there. Join the 22,000 that have already subscribed to our BitChute channel. We are also uploading all our videos to our Facebook page, facebook.com/redicecreations. Just search for Red Ice on Facebook. When we live stream, we multi-stream both to Twitter and Facebook, but more importantly, dlive.tv/redicetv. Get the DLive app, follow us there, and you'll get notifications when we go live. They have super chats incorporated on the platform as well. Thousands have joined us on DLive already, and that's a great option for live streaming. If you want notifications for any of our content, make sure you join our Telegram group. Go to t.me/redicetv and enable notifications. You can get the Telegram app for your phone or your computer. It's nice and secure as well. Notifications goes on Telegram every time something new is available from Red Ice or other important updates that we have. In addition, make sure that you follow us on twitter.com/redicetv, gab.com/redicetv, minds.com/redicetv, and instagram.com/redicemedia. Help spread the word about our videos and shows. Share links, post it in comments, tell friends, family, coworkers. We lost access to 333,000 subscribers on YouTube, but we'll rebuild the audience on new and better platforms that don't censor and accepts politically diverse opinions. YouTube will be outcompeted by platforms that simply can uphold U.S. law, recognize the First Amendment, but also the United Nations Declaration of Human Rights. The Supreme Court already ruled that there is no so-called hate speech exception to the First Amendment. Publishers like YouTube, Facebook, Twitter, and Google used the hate speech excuse, this clause, to silence dissident political views that they don't agree with, since they are biased political publishers that meddle in the election process and admittedly now has shown through leaked footage and documents that they want to sway public opinion by controlling what speech they allow or don't allow on their websites, even though they are granted special protection under the Communications Decency Act, Section 230, by the United States government. This means they should not be allowed to operate as a publisher like they do now. They should be a neutral platform, but time and time again, we have seen that they are not. All we ask is that these companies uphold United States law. Don't break the law by calling for violence, which we never did. And then these publishers should accept everything else that is protected under the First Amendment, since they are based in and were founded in the United States of America. They also receive corporate welfare, massive subsidies from the US government. This is taxpayer money, in other words. Considering their special protection status granted to them by the government under Section 230 of the Communications Decency Act, they should recognize free speech. And the US Supreme Court have already ruled that so-called hate speech is free speech. RedEyes.tv, RedEyesMembers.com. Visit our websites. A lot of great new updates in the work for both websites. Thank you for watching, and thank you for your support.